So, yeah, so don't, and don't worry about, you know, how you speak, what you say, whatever, because what we tend to do is we try not to edit these. So just be authentic, just speak from the heart. And anything at the, like even what I'm saying now, I'll edit out at the back end. So we bookend both together. Like Daniel, where do you come from?
The military, all over. Yeah, I grew up a military brat. I was born when my dad was out at DLI studying German and Russian during the Cold War. So grew up a military brat. Literally, you know, I just turned 40. Well, that's not true. I turned 40 last year. I'll turn 41 next month. But we did the math, and I'll be 41 next month. I've moved 48 times. And, you know, so typical military brat turned, you know, military veteran. So all over, but I've gotten to learn the business of that, of the military quite well. And it's a unique business. And I think that's why we're all here.
Look, I used to be fascinated there. You just mentioned the Cold War and learning Russian and German. And before we get on to you, Blake, and discover a bit more about you, I love geopolitics, very interested in how the world turns. Ever since I left high school, really, I just realized how much I didn't know about the world and just been sucking up knowledge. And I've been in the US now nearly a decade, and the number of times I've heard myself say when the media's banging on about Putin and or the elections or whatever, sorry, has everyone forgotten the Cold War? Has everyone forgotten what nation states do?
Recency bias is real. It's sad, but it's real.
Yeah. Recency bias.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Well, it's the fallacy and the notion of, hey, we've never experienced this before because we've not studied, we've not done our homework, we've not studied, you know, how we've gotten here. Yeah. It's a very first world and entitled problem, but yeah, it's one that nonetheless that we all, you know, specifically right now in this country, we face. Yeah. And to your point, you know, people have forgotten about the Cold War. People have forgotten, you know, they have forgotten what's occurred. And for so long, there was that lie that the Cold War ended and there was never a shot fired. Nothing could be further from the truth.
No, 100%. And I'm fascinated by it because it was a very real thing. And everyone thinks it's the 70s and 80s. So, you know, I'm quite open to criticize my own country. And in the UK, if you look at and I read a lot because of the ripple effect of yesteryear into today is always significant. And like, if you go back to the 80s, and anyone knows anything about UK history in the 80s, it was like massive upheaval, civil unrest across the board. And there's one of the big elements is about the miners' strikes. Now, I read somewhere in recent years, and it was always suspected, but I don't know how many people really care or really read about it, but the Russian government, as was, I think it's still Soviet era then, plowed something to the tune of $1 million into the miners' strike on behalf of the striking miners because they saw it as a way to disrupt UK society and foment the disruption of UK government. And it's like, well, there you go. It's like, and so it's sort of, that's their modus operandi. They don't just do it in third world nations like Africa or parts of Asia or even, you know, Central Asia. They'll also have a crack at tier one countries as well.
The structure you just described of the larger entity using resources to funnel in towards third parties or through a cutout essentially to accomplish a political goal, that's just been decentralized and fractured to, you know, ad nauseum all across the globe 24/7, 365 now. So that's the new paradigm of how psychological and information operation warfare is waged. So like, that's going on everywhere right now. I just look at the media alone and how information is channeled and funneled through certain gatekeepers. And but now, you know, there's the competing wavelengths of where you get your information from and which reality you perceive now. That's a two screens different, or one, was it one screen, two movies? That's what's going on now, it seems like, with a lot of people.
I like that analogy. And for the benefit of our audience, that was Blake. So Blake, welcome.
Sorry, I jumped in. It was too excited to talk about.
Yeah, no, 100%. So tell the world a little bit about yourself.
Sure. So my name is Blake Miles. I'm a former Green Beret, enlisted into the Army as a Special Forces recruit. Made it through the qualification course as a Special Forces engineer. Got to a team in 2004. Spent time out. I went to Iraq in 2006. Spent time while I was in Iraq as the detachment intelligence sergeant. So basically, our team sergeant got into a fight with our intel sergeant, and the intel sergeant got fired. And they're like, Blake, you're good at computers, sort of, and you're smart, sort of, so you're going to be the new intel guy. I'm like, all right, that sounds interesting. But I actually enjoyed it, basically just putting together the big spider web of, you know, this dude's funneling money here, this dude's, you know, this event happened here with this. And so basically just gathering raw intelligence, funneling it together, and then building an intelligence packet, going out and talking to informants and locals, getting more intelligence, and then building target packets and actually rolling on them and hitting them with our Iraqi scouts and Iraqi police force. So that's what I was doing in country. And then I got out in 2007, spent some time as a recruiter in the National Guard, and then got out completely 2011 and started working for the Green Beret Foundation, doing their social media while I was going to school. Did some writing over at softrep.com, even though all my articles have been disappeared down a memory hole. Still waiting on why that happened. Anyone wants to figure that out, let me know. So working with the Green Beret Foundation, they started working on a new program called the Next Ridgeline. And the goal was to help Green Berets transition out of active duty into the private sector. Because when I got out, it was very painful. And just because I didn't understand what the private sector valued, and I didn't understand what language they valued it in. Therefore, I couldn't explain myself in a way that they understood. Oh yeah, this dude just could be a value to our bottom line. So started working with Next Ridgeline and building that out, and some time passed that fell through, but basically I was always in it. Work the problem set of veteran transition, and last year I got through Special Forces Association. I got the Catalyst Program's information, read about what they were doing, and I thought to myself, this sounds a lot like what I wanted to build at the Next Ridgeline. So put in my application, and next thing I know, I got Dan calling me up saying, I've been trying to get a hold of you for years, and we need to talk. So he drove out to meet me, and you know, here we are now.
Let's lace that up a little bit then. So in the COVID era, you're innovating an idea, you're in entrepreneurializing business, you're in the sense that you've seen a problem in the market and you're coming up with a solution to solve that problem. So let's go back to you, Dan. What was the rationale for this, and what are some of the pain points that the
Catholics? Yeah, so, and you know, I'll gloss over because my story's not as cool as Blake's, but bottom line, I saw my father go from being a high-performing NCO. He was NCO of the year for the Air Force, and then wound up becoming an officer with multiple master's degrees in electrical and mechanical engineering from the Air Force Institute of Technology. And he went from this amazing, you know, this very, very high performing career in the military to where now all of a sudden he transitioned out and it was a job. And I saw him essentially devolve. And it sucks. You know, let's be honest. We all, I think all three of us as veterans all know, you know, failure sucks, right? But it sucks even worse to see your heroes fail. And, you know, that's what it was. I saw my dad, you know, go from being the epitome of health to gaining 60 pounds in 6 months. And, you know, it wasn't until 25 years later when he started working with us that he told me, he's like, only now am I starting to transition, you know, intrinsically transition. And, you know, despite his skill set, he was able to earn, you know, a very healthy wage and have, you know, some great titles, but it was never intrinsically fulfilling. So, you know, kind of with that, I saw that and I saw how hard that life was. And I didn't want to go in the military because of it. And then September 11th happened and I was a failed college athlete. It's probably the nicest way you could put it. But September 11th happened and I knew in that moment, I was like, you know, hey, you know, I know what I'm going to go do. And I had no clue, like had no idea what I was doing. I just showed up to the recruiter's office. And at the time I was in very good shape. And the guy just took one look at me. He's like, come back in 2 days. And, you know, so I enlisted and ended up doing, you know, gnarly little tour in Iraq in 04. And, you know, came back and was selected for this Green to Gold program to go become an officer. And I went back to, I showed up to college, you know, I'm thinking, okay, you know, everything's going to be set for me, and nothing was, and nothing could be further from the truth. It was, like Blake said, that transition from going from the military to college, and this is January 2005. It was brutal. It was very brutal. And it was because my, you know, my professors didn't understand me. I was trying to acclimate to this world where, you know, kids were more, you know, my age were more concerned about hooking up and you know, who they're going to be drinking with on Friday and Saturday nights, as opposed to, you know, getting work done, you know, and this is mission critical. And the transition was just very difficult. And then fast forward years later, I was getting out as an officer. And again, the process was just extremely brutal. And it got me thinking, as like, you know, there's got to be a better way. What if a program existed where high potential military members could come in, learn a company within an expedited rate, because that's how we learn the best, and turn around and audition for multiple career paths within that given organization. The company would find the right fit for their needs that would go far beyond the antiquated hiring process of, let me look at your resume and figure out if you're a good fit or not. Because that takes away all the tangible skill sets. And let's be honest, success falls into the tangible skill sets. Mm-hmm. And so I just, you know, I couldn't get that idea out of my head. You know, and veterans at the same time and spouses could come in and learn, you know, our new calling. And that's really what it is. You know, the military, it is a profession, but it's more than that. The Marines got it right. It's a calling. And, you know, and that's why, you know, I think so many veterans statistically have struggled or do struggle, is because that, you know, we you know, not finding our new calling sucks. And so, you know, I couldn't get that idea out of my head. So I left that cush job to, you know, go to business school and, try to figure out how to create this. And halfway through business school, I had an opportunity to, you know, I found the opportunity to bring this to life. And so I did just that. I dropped out of business school and here we are, you know, five and almost 6 years later. But what's funny about it is as I was going into business school, I came across this article from this guy who was talking about his transition, you know, back from being a Green Beret and being, you know, going into college and being told by the college, you know, the university, hey, you know, you need to take this communications 101 class. And he's like, hey, I speak multiple languages. I was leading hundreds of people in a foreign language. And, you know, I'm like, I need to contact this. And everything he said was, you know, there's got to be a better way. And it's just, you know, at that point in time, you know, this idea was just bursting out of me. And yeah. So I reached out to him, and that dude was Blake. But it only took him 6 years to respond back to me. So but
that's part of the problem right there.
it was hilarious, just because, you know, to that end, I at that time I was in Cincinnati, Ohio, and Blake was in, you know, Indiana, and I was reaching out to him like every 6 months. Yeah. And never heard anything from him. And then when we moved here, my wife and I moved to North Indianapolis 2 years ago. He was the first gentleman I reached out to. And again, nothing. And then lo and behold, a year later, I get this email randomly. And it just, I was like, you've got to be kidding me. So I didn't even read all the email. I called him up and I was like, hey, I know exactly who you are. I've been, you know, I'm a huge, huge fan. You've inspired this whole thing. And he's just like, okay. And so I was like, where are you? I'm driving to where you're at. I'll be there first thing in the morning tomorrow. I don't care where you're at. And so drove there. He was gracious enough to meet with me. And at the end of the conversation, I was like, so we're going to hire you. He's like, great. To do what? And I was like, I don't know. We'll figure it out. And you know, here we are a year later, and he's settling into our director of education programs quite well. Seeing how he was the impetus for the idea to, you know, come to fruition. So
I wasn't not responding to Dan because I didn't like him or I was too cool. I was legitimately, I went into bunker mode back around 2015. So I wasn't talking to hardly anyone, but I always had to throw that out there.
Hold that thought.
What's that?
Hold that thought, because.
Okay, cool.
It was, I want to, what I'd like to do, I want to talk in a minute about program challenges and developing programs and being entrepreneurial and all that, and come back around to the business end of things. But you both said something that, benefit of folks listening, I think it's really important, and if you don't mind, and I was actually wondering before you spoke, I thought, I've seen this behavior before, right? And people go into lockdown and don't speak to anyone, which is, I don't think it's necessarily a military thing alone. And I'll give you an example as an expatriate, right? I left the UK and basically became an expat, which is another form of economic migrant. And people say, why did you leave? I said, well, I want a job and I want to earn pay my bills and all that kind of stuff. All the reason we like to live in the world. 12 years over there. And one of the times I was the chair of a mental health service for expats who was suffering dislocation from the motherland. Very intense place to be, culturally different, politically different, socially different. And they're really under the pump on deliverables. And I remember at the time that with the psychologist on our transition, on our in this mental health charity, she said, for expats, if you're going to repatriate, you know, you basically need to plan your repatriation as soon as you land in country. Now think about that, because most of those expats were on a sort of an 18-month to 24-month cycle, right? And if you look at it in that lens, there's no planned repatriation for a military person going out of the military into civvy. It's all these things manifest. My wife, for example, the reason I'm in America is my wife's American. She came back to the motherland and in 4 months was just so, like you, Blake, in a bunker, emotionally, mentally in a bunker. She goes, she'd go to job interviews, she's got international experience, project management experience, and managing like super large budgets. She'd sew up and people would say, but you're not Chinese. And she said, no, well, why would I be Chinese? Well, you lived in Shanghai. She goes, what's that got to do with anything? I've been in international business. I'm applying for a senior management or a director's job and I've got all the skills and I speak two languages, by the way. And they go, yeah, no, but you're not American now. You can't be American. So, and that was what she faced. And she ended up, right? Someone, and I love her to bits because, and I'm very proud of her because she went back to work on the retail shop floor at $10 an hour, right? Because she goes, fine, then I have to start again. And it was heartrending to watch how the motherland treated her as like a returning expatriate. So you both mentioned, while I'm coming to you, both talked about painful and brutal, and those are really good choices of words. And without, I don't need to like lift up any old scabs, but tell me, why did you use those words, and let our audience understand why those are the words that are sort of at the top of your lexicon?
It's the truth. It's absolutely the truth. And you bring, and I'll let Blake speak because he's much better at speaking than I am. I suck at this, so I apologize. I'm much better with strategy and the implementation, but the bottom line is this. You bring up a phenomenal point, and thank you for sharing that with us, because at the end of the day, and this is something that people need to start, especially veterans, but we as a country, and really as an interconnected world, which we absolutely are, need to start understanding and start employing into our practices, is that everybody goes through a transition nowadays. The fallacy, or the days of getting out of high school and going working for the conglomerate for 60 years or even less than that, those days are gone. And and to that end, like you said, people are migrating. That's what we do. We migrate, right? I mean, that's we seek the unknown to learn. And saying all that is that we're all in this together. And it's one of those things where, and let's be honest, the military does this cool little trick where they say, hey, thank you for your service, here's the door. You're not one of us anymore. And now all of a sudden, you're battling all of these outer and inner demons, and you're really battling not becoming a statistic. Yeah. And that's excruciating, to say the least. And saying that, I just for me, it was hell. It was absolutely hell. But and I was there for 7 years. But creating this and that process and the tangible results right away for me, I realized real quickly, this is all I want to do, and I found my calling. So I better become very good at it. And, that's when it started, the pucker factor really kicked in. But that's for me, it's because everything that you just said, everything that we're here to speak about, it's brutal, but it doesn't have to be. And that's what we're focused on, is helping folks learn from our mistakes, our successes, and help them get to where they're capable and where they truly want to be. Together.
Yeah.
So
thanks, Daniel. Blake.
Yeah. What? So painful, brutal, I don't know what word specifically I said, but my pain specifically stems from the first job search when I got out. I was limited to geography in the Chicago area, so that made it a bit difficult, but the job that I ended up finding after 6 months of semi-diligent work, my wife would say not diligent enough at all, but semi-diligent job searching, what I'll call it. I found a job at Uline packing boxes on the warehouse floor. And it was frustrating. Only, and the frustrating part was because I was my frontline leaders, the difference between me and them was only a college degree. And I think it was only an associate's degree. And, I had just, not even a year had passed. And prior to that, I was leading, Iraqi troops on operations, speaking to them in Arabic, because I knew enough Arabic and they knew enough English. We didn't need an interpreter. We could run ops. And, not a year earlier, I was doing that. But that was the only thing I could find. And it was, for me, it was frustrating, and the painful part just came from not understanding what the disconnect was. And in hindsight, I know the disconnect now, and what you brought up is a brilliant point. And it's more evidence, Dan, you're like this, more evidence that this is the veteran problem is a cultural language translation problem. And it primarily stems from the fact that veterans' language is a different dialect than the civilian language that the people that they protect. And they get out, they think differently, they speak differently because they think differently, and they think differently because they speak differently and all that. So we think in terms of like, we got to get the mission done. What's the mission? What's our higher commander intent? And that shapes how we think. So when we get out and we're not in an environment that has that language, we feel left out, and that feeling of being felt left out, it makes us want to isolate even further. And that's what starts to spiral. And then you start, you know, throwing alcohol, drugs, and women or boys, what relationship, then you just have a spiral effect. And that's where I think a lot of the pain comes in. And then for me, you know, I had a herniated disc that turned into a, you know, L5-S1, needing to get surgery. And, you know, I was taking Vicodins like candy just to make it through work. And it was an ugly pathway. And that was just the start of it. Eventually I got into recruiting and I learned a lot about social media marketing. And that, so then I started progressing in my understanding of the language of business. And when I bunkered down, that was after the working on the next Ridgeline, trying to get that program launched, and running into just bureaucratic battles that I did not expect. And when I realized that they were there, it shook me. I don't know how else, because the community that I expected to be, you know, when I got out, I expected the SF, the Special Forces community, I expected something that wasn't there. So in trying to get the building what I wanted to have, and running into roadblocks and not understanding why the roadblocks were there, it was just a demoralizing experience. So that's what led to me falling down, you know, going down the bunker. And the good side of me going down the bunker was I learned cybersecurity, which led me into Bitcoin, which led me into cryptocurrency, which led me into markets. And that pathway of the things that I've learned in the last 6 years, just the lessons I've taught my son alone are going to be worth far more than, you know, I could invest right now. So I'm happy about that at least. But it did lead me to stumbling in front of Dan's radar. So well worth it.
There's a couple of things there, and let's start steering around to what the program does and how it helps people. And there's a couple of things where you've both sort of helped yourself, which is, I think, really important for anyone listening. You can get help, but ultimately there comes a point where you do have to help yourself. You talk about your own learning, and I learned this is very loose terminology, what I call neural scarring. I've worked with athletes, and I've worked with some serious athletes who are like military folks, right? Once they're off the podium, no one cares who they are. Just like Scott Schmitz, they disappear into society. And I'm seeing it over here in the US, right? There's a bunch of them going to come out of the Olympic Training Center, and they've still got to pay a buck for a cup of coffee at McDonald's like everyone else. And they do have, it's not that they are going to have, they do have similar challenges ahead of them. With the thing about neural scarring, when you have a trauma impact in your brain, and that could be through a military experience or a civilian experience, you tend to sort of shut it down. You freeze and it shuts down. And if, like any muscle, if you've got scar tissue in any muscle, you've got to work it, right, to get that muscle back fully functional, just like your brain. So helping yourself and learning is driving your own learning, and all three of us are intentional learners. Just look at the environments we're working in now, is part of the healing process. But also, let's segue that into the actual program. What are you designing, and how does it help folks?
Great, great questions and phenomenal points. And bottom line, there is no one size fits all, right? There is no one program. And anyone that pretends to be is just full of it. Our program is for folks that are truly that are truly go-getters, folks that truly want to invest in themselves and their families and their future. And we basically, the entire first week and a half, and Blake can really attest to this, is designed, you know, we act as a trifecta, right? We measure success really predicated on the individual and what they tell us what success is to them, but we also revisit that consistently because it evolves. And so saying that, you know, our foundation is a successful intrinsic transition. So it's no longer Captain Hance, it's Dan. You know, it's no longer, you know, well, I mean, it's still, you're still that person, you know, it's no longer Green Beret Blake, it's Blake. That's fine. Those skills transfer. What got you, what made you successful in the business of the military, and the military is absolutely a business, it's just a unique industry. What made you successful in that business does translate across a myriad of business segments or of industries and business segments. It's finding your fit. And that's predicated on, you know, finding your why, finding your how. Right. And that's what we do, is we focus on combining those, and we really focus on, and it's who you know, then it's what you know. So we bring in, we break down piece by piece. Hey, look, this is what you did in the military. This is what that translates into in, say, you know, in HR. We had a lady who is a senior executive for a little company called Walmart, who happens to run their military affinity group, who is, you know, an Army veteran, who comes in and says, hey, look, this is what HR is in the military. This is what it is at the Fortune 1 company in the world. This is what transfers. This is what does not. Here's what you need to know. And then through concise academic coursework that's really based on proven application and not so much the ethereal theory, right? We focus on helping these folks understand they've been doing bits and pieces of this all along, but this is how you take that into the civilian space and take it to that next level. And so it's truly an upskilling that we provide to veterans and spouses. But what we also focus in on is we focus on, and again, like for marketing, you know, Procter & Gamble's the, for lack of better terms, they're the Delta Force of marketing. My wife's a former P&G exec. So she's coming in and saying, look, you guys have been doing X, Y, Z. And then we replicate that at least 50 times throughout the course. But the folks that are doing the teaching are actually titans of industry. These are folks who actually know exactly what they're talking about. Moreover, they have the academic pedigree, but more importantly, they're all veterans and spouses themselves. So they know where all of our candidates are, even if those candidates can't convey that in a concise manner yet. And so what this does is this puts our candidates front and center in front of the exact people that it would take them years to get in front of. And now those people are devoted to helping our candidates, you know, get to where they want and need to be. And then it just continues to build. And then lastly, what we do is we put it all together, and they get an opportunity to go inside multiple organizations of various industries. And through a couple of days, they get to do exactly what I, you know, that idea I had years ago of, hey, what if they could go inside these companies and learn, you know, not only meet the key decision makers, but also they can actually engage and learn current and future initiatives. So they're learning the business, and then they get to consult for the companies and work with the various teams across the various business segments, and find out, holy cow, I was a logistics officer, but I actually there were things that I was doing as a logistics officer, as a commander, that actually relates into finance that I wouldn't have known otherwise, or relates into marketing that I never would have realized. And so, and through this organization, you know, through this trial, the candidates not only get to audition for various career paths within those organizations, but they also get to audition the companies as well, by truly getting to experience the culture and knowing what that really is, and getting to see that day to day, and working with those companies and those teams, and not only creating that career path, but also by saying, hey, look, you know, I thought this is where I wanted to go, but on the back end, getting through, it's a great company, but this is, that's not what I want to do. Actually, I want to go to that thriving small business that happens to be sitting on, you know, $100 million worth of capital, where I can go in there and I can come in as a senior director and I can make more of an impact initially, or not. So, I mean, what we provide them is calculated options that, it's who you know, then it's what you know. So we put them exactly in front of who they want to know, but we make sure they're armed with the requisite information ahead of time so that they're prepared for success and not failure. And we do that all between 6 to 8 weeks.
I think that's phenomenal. And there's a whole bunch of reasons why, but Blake, I want to hear from you. And some of what you're saying there, Daniel, because I've always had a soft spot for veterans and athletes. And I think it's because, and it's going to sound a bit bizarre, there's an underlying naivete in both groups of people around how the world ticks outside of their bubble. And so it sort of tweaks my heart muscle, because I don't like people just, if you like, suffering just because of their own naivete. That's a bit cruel to me. But Blake, coming around to you, I think you said you're the director of education. Forgive me if I've got that wrong, but what I'm interested in is when you're designing the education piece or the transformation program, what are some of the challenges you have to overcome?
I think the biggest challenge to overcome is getting the veteran to hit the ignition switch. Because once they hit the ignition switch, the same old engine that made them successful in the military turns on again. They're like, oh yeah, I can do this. But prior to them hitting that ignition switch, it's what you're talking about. The naive, that's a brilliant, brilliant observation. And I was definitely in that category. They're just idling, or not even idling. They're just, their car's dead. And they're just sitting there staring at it, wondering how am I going to go somewhere? Until they start the car and they actually get in the process of wanting to learn. And I think for me, that was what started for me. I'll tell you a story that started my engine, my ignition, going back to school, starting first semester at a community college of Lake County in Illinois, finding Khan Academy in 2008, 2009. So like they're like early version model of Khan Academy, and starting off at basic edition and going all the way up to calculus and reteaching myself math all the way from the beginning. I learned so much just from that process of reteaching myself math and understanding like why formulas work and why things are the way they are. Like just doing that got me momentum into realizing like I actually love learning, and I love learning in the Q course. It's, you know, I was in school in the special force qualification course. I was 2 years of training from start to finish, just nothing but learning all day long. And I love that because I get to learn from other people who are passionate about what they're doing. So that, like, it worked for me. And that was my ignition point. And then that just kind of carried my momentum forward. But I'd say that's the initial problem is getting that ignition. And then once they have that momentum, like, you know, you can kind of see them carry forward, and then they're motivated. The only other problems I'd say after that is, you know, just the demons can catch up with people, and you can see something's wrong in their life, usually because of something that they've done, and it like hits them in their life and it messes them up, and then they get, you know, off the path, and then they can't continue because they got something else going on. And I think that would probably be the second biggest problem. That's a really good question. Dan, do you have any differing opinions on problems from candidates getting them in that mindset?
So there's a lot of moving parts. And we were talking about before, you know, before we began this, about entitlement. There's a heavy sense of entitlement that the military breeds. right? And there's this common nonsense that the, you know, folks who, let's be honest, a lot of the well-intentioned folks that teach the TAP classes, they've never done anything in the civilian side. They've never really accomplished anything great on the civilian side. And they have no clue what they're actually talking about. And I've sat in on literally thousands of those classes. And at the end of the day, you get folks who have been told, hey, listen, you're going to leave this job and you're going to walk into a career making $100,000 a year. Everybody's going to want to hire you. And it doesn't matter if you're an E4. It doesn't matter if you've never managed really more than, you know, two or three people. This is why people are going to want to hire you. And it makes no sense. And so there's this constant entitlement that I've seen and witnessed firsthand. And it's just, nothing could be further from the truth. Moreover, I also see a lot of people then on the flip side, people undervaluing their skill set. There was a great report that came out by Forbes, and I believe it was in February 2018. The article talks about the most successful Fortune 500 CEOs and actually entrepreneurs in this country have all been former military leaders. And it's because, and particularly Army and Marine Corps officers, but it's because of how we're trained. But, you know, they go back and they show, you know, how you can take, and there's a great story in there about a Green Beret who was an enlisted person who was able to build a thriving company. And I can't remember what the organization is, but was able to build a thriving company based upon his experiences as being, you know, a team sergeant, and how he was able to kind of parlay what he learned from the business of the military and SF and apply that to his startup that I think he ended up selling for several million reasons why. But the point being is that folks don't understand what they truly bring to the table. And so what we do is get down to brass tacks and say, look, this is who and what you are. This is where and how this transfers, not only into one specific industry, but across a myriad of industries. If you want to see what garbage looks like, go to the state of Ohio veterans page, and they have this blanket, hey, listen, this is what you did in the military. This is what this translates into in the civilian space. And it was written by somebody who's never done anything in the civilian space. I know that person. He's an idiot. He has no idea what he's talking about. But that's the point, right? Is that the military has allowed us to become too political, and it's right. forgotten that it's a business. And in doing so, it's set its constituents, or its troops, up for failure. And it's now incumbent upon veterans to understand, and spouses to understand, that you are starting over. You are starting over. However, you're starting with a strategic advantage of, you know what it is to, you know, work long days, to work, you know, 48 hour days, right? You know what it is to, you know, get the mission, what the mission is, how to accomplish that, how to assimilate within a various, you know, diverse workforce, and get everybody on the same page and win. There's another great article that came out that talks about the number one, and Heinrich and Struggles, I believe, was the one that published this, but which is a very profitable executive search firm. But they said that the number one success factor in all high performers is grit. And they define that as being able to overcome through, you know, extreme adversity. And I'm loosely basing that. Tell me, since September 11th, workforce contingent has had to not only accept that, but also embrace it and embrace the suck, right? And win consistently across a multitude of battlefields and a multitude of businesses, right? Mm-hmm. Than military members and our families. Nobody. And so that's why, again, going back to what the shortfalls are, there's a few primary, but they are very, very deep. And so, you know, we work with, especially with great organizations and partners like you, with DOL Coach, we work with people that are masters at their craft that have been there and can help these folks, again, walk over to the bridge and overcome those shortfalls that, you know, we've all had to painfully fall through and our spouses have fallen through.
Yeah, 100%, man. So a couple of things there. And what I want to do actually is we're getting close to the end, but I've created this sort of segment called myth busting, because you said a couple of things there. I think it's really cool for us to like just bust it out. And for folks, whatever side of the fence they're sitting right now, but on the grit side, our first podcast that we just put out with Darby Bailey, she was talking about grit. She's a psychotherapist. She does program building, and she's been, you know, she's helping people reconfigure their lives after trauma. And she does program build outs because of trauma. I mean, maybe we should get in touch with her. I worked with her in the sports governance world for a number of years, and she's all about the grit piece as well. So there's a bit of commonality for you. And then another thing you said about helping yourself and also about spouses, Dan, man, and I watched in the expatriate world, the number of spouses, male and female, who suffered in support of their partner's career and also in a dislocated environment, right? That's really tough. And we have to look out for those people as well, because folks can't perform if there isn't a foundation to perform from. And Blake, you spoke about self-medicating. It's just all that stuff. I'm so glad you bring it to the surface, because if we don't acknowledge problems, we can't drive solutions. It's just so fundamentally logical to me. And I love to bring everything back to rugby as well. So, for example, I'm coaching some US rugby athletes. And people think all military people are just something you see off the TV, a Bruce Willis type or whatever. They think all rugby athletes are just these monsters. They're not. They're people of different shapes and sizes. And these guys are playing at sort of pre-Olympic level. So we talk about the contact game and concussion. I said, I'm going to have to show you some self-defense. And they go, why? I said, because I watch you put yourself into a contact. Let's use the phrase, a contact environment. And I just stand there looking at you going, you're an accident waiting to happen. So let me give you a base level of understanding of body mechanics, how body mechanics functions, how not to put things that are important to your life, like your head or your jaw or another joint, in the way of a swinging weapon, basically. And they go, oh, wow, that's really interesting. And I said, come on, seriously? You know, what a coach is coaching you? And Daniel, it comes back to your point about people transitioning military folks. What are they coaching you? What are they telling you? So which segues back into the $100,000 paycheck. There aren't too many of those around in the world. You've got to have some really special goods to give if someone's going to write you a $100,000 paycheck. And if I'm writing you a $100,000 paycheck out of my business, that means I've got to be earning a lot of revenue, because there's going to be more than one person drawing down $100,000 paycheck, and so on and so forth. And just so basic economics there, lads and ladies, is let's get that one, put it in a parking lot. And that's not directed at you two. That's my first myth busting, right? Is if you're going to be on the north of to six figure salary, right? 100 and north of 100 and benefits. Remember that, because the benefits cost too. And to Blake, your point earlier, you've got to flick that ignition switch and be really humming, you know, really rocking and rolling. So that's my myth. There aren't that many $100,000 paychecks out there unless you're really willing to work for it. Whether it's military to civvy or civvy to military, let's start with you, Blake. What myth would you like to bust?
Oh, man. I got wheels spinning right now. Dan, I'm going to have to pass off to you real quick. Let me think.
Sure. So I want to flip to the inverse of what you just said, Angus, yep. Which, by the way, you got the coolest freaking name. I love it. But I grew up with a musical prodigy who's named Angus. Interesting guy. But, you know, nonetheless, you know, we talk about investing in yourself, right? And Blake talked about, you know, investing in the markets and learning how to read the markets and you know, how paramount that is. It's one of the things that I've heard thousands of times, because what we've done, and this is something that we built out certificate programs that have been approved both at the state level and nationally. So our program we just graduated last Friday with, in partnership with Indiana Wesleyan University. It's a nationally recognized certificate in business management, which is a core function of what all our veterans and spouses bring to the table. But they also can earn up to 3 years of academic coursework, be awarded up to 3 years of academic coursework predicated upon their previous military, professional, and academic experiences. That's something that took a long time, and that's an whole other story and a nightmare in of itself, but it finally came through. But and then through our program, not only do they earn the certificate, but they also earn 9 credit hours towards their bachelor's degree. So ostensibly, they only have to take 7 classes after successfully completing our cohort, and they have a bachelor's degree in management or business administration or, you know, some type of along that vein. And then at the same time, we've also partnered with phenomenal universities like Southern Methodist and the Cox School of Business. And we have a few other huge ones that we're about to announce. Can't say yet, but again, they earn certificates in data analytics, and they earn a certificate in project management with, you know, partnership with you great folks. But they also earn 6 credit hours towards their MBA through Cox, which is a tier 1 business school in North America. But, you know, saying that, is what this does is that this also provides credentialing, but it helps folks get to where you want to be. And I've heard folks say, you know, oh, I can do Khan Academy, or I can just do, you know, XYZ, and that's the same thing as a business degree. That might be the same thing as a business degree from a mediocre, low level degree, you know, school program. Even then, it's not. It really is. It is. It's who you know, then it's what you know. And that's what these prime schools really bring to the offer, is that their alumni base is phenomenal. And what we do, again, we tap in heavily into that alumni base. We tap in heavily into the actual, you know, decision makers and the true leaders who are establishing protocol and policy and overseeing the execution of it. And that's who's teaching for us. And so, you know, what I'm getting to is that, you know, if you are a superstar and you know it, maybe pump the brakes a little bit and really kind of consider, especially if you have that GI Bill or you have, you know, access to voc rehab, rehabilitation and education, because you're basically throwing away an opportunity to upskill your working business acumen. And your networking opportunities. And that's really, I mean, for me, I told you, I dropped out of business school to start this, and it's become very apparent to me that I need to go back and complete business school. And so I'll be doing that when I finally get a moment to breathe within the next few years. But the reason is because, you know, what I was able to learn and extrapolate from that, you know, that 9 months year, has definitely gotten me to where I'm at. But in order to take the company, to take the catalyst to that next echelon, I need to go back and reinvest in myself. And I need to go and get this information, and so that we can apply it directly to what we're doing to better our veterans and their spouses' lives. And so, you know, I just say that, don't, just because something has the word, you know, school attached to it or academic, doesn't mean it's necessarily bad. And that, you know, as we all learned, you wanted to become a Green Beret, you had to go through the Q course. You wanted to become a Ranger, you got to go to Ranger school, etc. You know, those challenges are typically what makes us the best version of ourselves, by getting through it. And you know, it, just like you learned in the military, you know, embrace the suck and adapt, improvise, adapt, and overcome. Utilizing those same basic principles, as cliche as they are, but just remember, cliches are cliches for a reason, because they work. That will get you to that next stage.
Yeah, Dan, it's funny you should say that, because my service was short, and I often think insignificant compared to when people like you guys. But one thing I do say to folks, and I'd everything I learned in the Navy and subsequently in Naval College paid dividends over and over and over again. I'm 25 years out of that environment, I think. 25? Mate, yeah, roughly. And I've squeezed every bloody pip out of that lemon, right? 10 times over. It's not a one and done deal. 10 times over, right? Over the last 25 bloody years.
Refill the lemon. Refill the lemon to squeeze it out of you.
Yeah. 100%. So I think to your point, it's about look back, invest in yourself and redevelop yourself and be prepared for development and redevelopment. Also keep going back to that lemon and sucking the juice out of it, because there's more in there. Blake, I was watching you as Darren was speaking. Looked like you were racking your brain on the myth busting question.
So, I figured it out. I got it. So I think this would be, I don't know if it's exactly a myth, because I can't exactly word it in a way that I want to be a myth, but it's probably a paradigm shift that led me down going into the bunker mode in a lot of ways, is recognize that the military, if we look at the military as a business, it is not beneficial for them, for their employees, to know that they have far better options or greener grass on the outside. So once I recognized that, it helped me understand why things are the way they are in a lot of ways. Cause it helped me to see the qui bono, the who benefits from certain things, and understanding why there are challenges in the way there are.
Yeah. The old thing that the grass isn't greener on the other side of the fence. It's as true today as it ever was.
Well, not necessarily. I mean, I guess what I'm saying is there is a benefit in keeping military members, specifically high performing ones that could find very, very high end jobs in the civilian world. There is a value in keeping them in the dark about that.
Yeah. There's a deep thought.
And that's why I went into my bunker.
So we're coming to the, yeah, man, I could share anecdotes with you two forever. I've got like three continents worth of anecdote. So we're coming to the close on this. And thank you so much. You both opened up magnificently. And huge value to hearing you both speak. So just before we put the lights out on this podcast, what's the one thing? And remember, people often remember the first thing and the last thing, right? And those are the hookings. Get them going back and dig a little deeper. What would you like the one thing, one last thought you'd like to leave us with?
Blake, I'll let you, after you.
You got me there. Don't quit. Don't quit driving towards something. I don't care what it, pick a goal, even if it's just something simple as not getting mad that day. As long as you are making progress towards where you want to go, you'll have momentum that you can at least fall back on when things get stupid, because they're going to get stupid. And that's how you just got to keep going. Just don't quit. People are relying on you.
Nice one, Dan.
Yeah, I, along that same vein, I think that's that because the suicide rates have spiked and they're 22 a day, I think, is actually a lower number, unfortunately, but it's still 22 or 28 too many. You have, at the end of the day, as we said before, the military is absolutely a business. It's just a unique industry. Think about what you enjoyed about that business. Think about what you didn't, what you hated about that business, and start thinking about where you can take the best, extrapolate the best parts of that, both sides, and apply it to your future and your current situation, and effectively backwards plan, just like you were taught. know this is the goal. This is where you're at right now. You know, three to five, you know, strategic plans to successfully implement that's conducive to you, and then just execute. And that's the most important part is execution. You have resources. There are many wonderful resources out there. If you need to speak to somebody at vet centers, you know, those are free. You know, the VA, you know, they have utilize the resources. Again, not all are created equal. We know that. But also, you know, at the same time, you know, the Catalyst, reach out to us. We would love to, you know, we would love to meet you. And if we're not the right fit for you, we'll certainly introduce you to our great partners whom are. But, you know, at the end of the day, we also have a lot to offer. So just know that you are a tremendous value add, but your education, you know, you still have quite a bit to contribute. Your best days are not over. They're actually are still to come. And so live the life that you've earned, live the life that you deserve. And we can't wait to meet you.
Awesome. So thanks, fellas. Thank you so much for being here. And you know, we're just past Veterans Day or Armistice Day, however you want to look at it, and going into Thanksgiving. So appreciate your service and you know, blessings to you both going into your next chapter, and look forward to seeing you on the other side.
You too. Hey, brother.
Thank you very much. Great questions.
Yeah, thank you. This was awesome. Really looking forward to working with you. So I'm very excited about that opportunity. So thank you.
Likewise.